As most of you know, I'll be retiring the end of June after 44 years as a United Methodist minister, 34 of them here. And so I decided that if I'm going to be here just a short time more, I really ought to solve the basic problems of humanity in my sermons. And this morning I want to focus on perhaps the central struggle of Christians for the last 2,000 years. The question that not only all Christians struggle with, but really that all humanity struggles with. And there are a number of different ways that this question is put. So I want to share how they're, some of the ways they're described, and then I'll answer it for you in about 15 to 20 minutes. We've been working on it 2,000 years, but I'll explain it all. Yeah. How do I describe it? Before there were interstate highways, there were back roads through South Georgia through which my family went every year on vacation as we went from Florida up to Western North Carolina. And one of the certainties of the trip was that on many of the pine trees were nailed signs that said, "Get right with God." How do we get right with God? What does that mean? It means, to use church language, how do I go to heaven? How do I know that I'm saved? What must I do to be saved? How do I avoid hell? How do I know that I'm in a right relationship with God? Or if you don't want to use church language, want to use a language, a secular language, which resonates with most people today, how do I get rid of this nagging sense of guilt? How do I deal with an inferiority complex? Is there any meaning to my life? Is, when I die, is that it? Why was I born? What's the point of living? Those are all ways of asking the same question. And as we turn to the Christian story, we turn, obviously, first of all, to Jesus. What does Jesus tell us about how to get right with God? About how to get out from under that nagging sense of guilt? You know, that your mother, you may be 90 years old, but your mother is still lecturing you. Is she not? And you guys, I know. Yeah, you're youth director, and your assistant youth director, or you should do it this way. Don't you do that? You know that those voices stay with you the rest of your life, and a sense of I should be doing this, and I know I shouldn't have done that. Well, what does Jesus say? In the 25th chapter of Matthew, are three stories that Jesus tells toward the very end of his ministry. He tells the story of the 10 bridesmaids. He tells the story of the parable of the talents. Different people are given different abilities and talents by resources by their master, and whether they put them to good use or not is how their master feels about them. And then perhaps the greatest parable that Jesus ever told, the judgment of the nations, the parable of the sheep and the goats. Let me read it to you, beginning with the 25th chapter, beginning with the 31st verse. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep and the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." And then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? When was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these of my family, you did it to me." Then he will say to those at his left hand, "You that are accursed," nothing personal, "you that are accursed, depart from me into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. Naked and you did not give me clothing. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me." Then they also will answer, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and didn't take care of you?" And then he will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me." And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." Jesus is pretty clear. Jesus sets the bar really high. We are judged by our actions and by the intention in our actions. Do we do the loving thing for others? Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, visit them in prison. Do we do for others as we would have done for ourselves? Do we see in the stranger, the lost, the outcast, the hated, Jesus, and treat them accordingly? That's the standard that Jesus sets. Jesus teaches that you are to forgive those who hurt you, that you are to love your enemies, that you are to forgive everybody, no matter what, and take care of each person as if they are your brother or your sister or Christ himself. Great. Now we know how to get right with God. The problem is, of course, that as Jesus himself says, this is impossible. You can't do it. Here's what you have to do to be judged worthy of God's love. And none of you can do it. It's impossible. Oh, it's possible with God, but for you it's impossible. Great. Now we know how to get right with God. We know how to get rid of that sense of inferiority. We know how to have meaning in our lives. We know how to not be afraid of life anymore, not to have anxiety. All you have to do is do exactly what Jesus said. Love your enemies. Do good to those who persecute you. And it's impossible. Can't do it. We're stuck. We hear what Jesus says, and we can't do it. And this is why for 2,000 years the church has been struggling. Christians have struggled with, what must I do to be saved? How do I get to heaven? How do I get rid of this nagging feeling of guilt? How do I give my life purpose and meaning? You know, use the religious or non-religious language, it doesn't matter. It's all the same question. How do I deal with doing the right, do I do the right thing, or do I throw myself on the grace of God, or do I have the right faith, or what? How do I get out of this? St. Paul is the great figure in Christian history who really puts this question to us. He is so important to the New Testament. He wrote much of the New Testament in the form of letters to churches that he started. He is so important and so central to the Christian faith that there is a town in Minnesota named for him. Minneapolis, yeah. So, but Paul, the reason that Paul is so important is that he wrestles with this same question that every one of us has to wrestle with. He bears his soul on this. Now, scholars say that there is the religion of Jesus, and that with Paul, we begin to have a religion about Jesus. And they're not the same thing. You study that sometime. But St. Paul is wrestling with what to do. And here's what he says in Romans chapter 7. He says this. Now, I've edited this down slightly. I've not changed a word. I've just taken out some of the redundancy in the passage. Because I know you've got a short attention span. You got somewhere to be at 11, I know. I do not understand my own actions. For I do not do what I want. But I do the thing I hate. I can will what is right, but I cannot do it. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I do. Wretched man that I am, who will rescue me from this body of death? Let me stop there. I don't understand my own actions. Does that describe you? Why do I keep doing this? You know, I want to lose 30 pounds and then I have another piece of cake. Why do I do that? I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Why do I keep saying that? Oh, God. I can will what's right, but I can't do it. Is that you? For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I do. I'm so screwed up. You know, I know I shouldn't do that, but I do it. There's some things I know I should do, and I don't do them. See, Paul is describing you and me. Well, you. I mean, I'm a preacher, you know. Paul's describing all of us. And wretched man that I am, who's going to rescue me from this body of death? How do I get out of this? How do I get unstuck? How do I quit hearing my mother's voice lecturing me? You know, you really should do that. Oh, you shouldn't do that. No, don't do that. You should do this. You know, we all get that voice in our heads telling us what we should do. And most of the time we know what's right. We know what we should do. We just don't do it. We'd like the toddler who's reaching for the forbidden candy, and as she's reaching for it, she says, no, 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 no. And the whole time that she's grabbing, she says, no, no, no. She knows it's wrong, but she does it anyway. That's us. We're still toddlers. Paul embodies the struggle we have to do the right thing. He was raised as a Pharisee. Now, Pharisees are pictures of the enemies of Jesus, but actually they're very close to Jesus. In fact, many scholars think Jesus was a Pharisee. He was just a better Pharisee than the rest of them in that they desperately wanted to do that which was right. They looked at the laws in the Bible, the Ten Commandments and all the other laws, the laws of the accumulated wisdom of the Jewish faith, and they looked at them and they completely committed themselves to serving God. They were rigorous in doing the right thing. Paul was the Pharisee's Pharisee by his own admission. He did everything right that God wanted him to do. And what he discovered was that doing everything right led him to be a murderer. Because Paul, in his zeal to defend God, as if God needs defending, was accomplice to the murder of the first Christian martyr, St. Stephen. He stood by approvingly holding the coats of the men who were stoning Stephen to death. And he did this in the name of God. And we see plenty of examples of that in the news today. In the name of God, let me kill you. Because I'm right and you're wrong. And Paul knew what God wanted. He did his very best to do the right thing. And then on the road to Damascus to imprison more Christians, to put this heresy out of business, he was confronted by a vision of Jesus himself. And his life was turned inside out. He had to re-examine everything he'd ever believed in, everything he'd ever done, and discovered that in trying to do the right thing, he'd done the wrong thing. So he goes away for a long period of reflection and then comes back to travel the whole known world as a missionary. Shipwrecked, beaten, imprisoned, ultimately executed. Paul gave his life to serving Jesus. Doing the right thing at last for the right person, and guess what? It still wasn't enough. Because Paul says, I don't understand my own actions. I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. He's not talking about himself back when he was, you know, helping the murder of St. Stephen. He's talking to himself now as a mature Christian, as someone who's given the second half of his life to serving Jesus and risking his life for Jesus, and he still doesn't do what he wants, but does the thing I hate. I can will what's right, but I can't do it. I don't do the good I want, but the evil I don't want is what I do. He's still stuck. Even after his conversion, even after giving his life for the gospel, he still can't do it well enough. Can't do it purely enough. Wretched man that I am, who will rescue me from this dilemma? What do I do? So you have the religion of Jesus, which sets this impossibly high standard. You love your enemies. You pray for people who persecute you. Do to all other people as you want them to do to you. It's impossible. Sounds good. It's impossible. You can't do it. Jesus expects you to do it. And in the same breath, he says it's impossible. It's impossible. It's possible for God, but it's impossible for humans. You can't do it, but I expect you to do it, and that's how you're going to be judged. That's what Jesus says. Sheep and goats. How did you act? And notice Jesus doesn't care too much about whether you're calling Lord, Lord or not. It's not what you say you believe. It's how you act. And if you don't act to this high standard, you depart into the depths. And this is the gospel. This is good news. Well, great. What do I do? And that's what Paul's wrestling with. What do I do? I can't do it. No matter how hard I try, I can't do it. No matter how deeply I pray to Christ, I can't do it. I'm stuck. What do I do? And yet, in the same breath, he's able to say, thanks be to God through Jesus Christ. Somehow, he gets unstuck. Somehow, Paul is able to get right with God, able to get out of the guilt, able to know that he has heaven, know that he is saved, know that his life has meaning despite his mistakes. Somehow, Paul works his way through that. I think the answer to it comes when we see that the Jesus who gives us this impossibly high standard, which he expects us to live up to, and in the same breath says, I know you can't do it, because Jesus is describing what that way of God living is like. He says, this is the way the children of God live, and you can't do it. But I expect it of you as the children of God, but you can't do it. Thanks a lot, Jesus. You sound like my mother. You know, telling me I should do things that I can't do them. I'm stuck. What do I do? Paul says, yeah, we're all stuck. Jesus has given us this great, beautiful dream of how we should live, and I can't do it. I'm stuck. Oh, wretched man that I am. And you see how people slide into depression, anxiety, insecurity, an inferiority complex. I don't measure up. I can't do it. I can't meet the standards everybody sets for me. I can't do this. It's too much for me. What do I do? And people slide downwards into the depths. You don't have to think in terms of heaven and hell to see people going through hell in this life because they just don't measure up. They can't do it. Paul's answer is, I believe that Paul is saying, be careful now. Don't say, okay, here we got the law doing the right thing here. And over here is the grace of Jesus Christ, the chalice, the sacrifice of Jesus. He said, don't get caught now in saying, well, I have to believe the right things about Jesus. I have to go to the right church. I have to have the right creed. I have to believe exactly the right thing. So I have to choose between being a Lutheran and a Calvinist and a Catholic and a Mormon. Oh, I'll be a Methodist. Got the right one. And then I got to believe it hard enough and sincerely enough. If I pick the right belief system and believe it hard enough, then I'll get right with God. It'll be okay. I won't carry that guilt around with me. And I'm sure the people that nailed the signs to the trees in South Georgia had in mind a particular belief system and a way of believing it that would get you right with God. They cared about us. But problem is, that becomes another kind of doing the right thing. That's not faith. That's making our belief system and our clinging to our belief system another good work. It's another thing we do, and we can't pick the right system and believe it hard enough in order to get a claim on God to get out from the stuckness we're in. We're still stuck. Maybe I chose the wrong belief system. Maybe I should have been a Buddhist instead of a Baptist. I don't know. You know, how will I know? I won't know until I'm dead and it's too late. What am I going to do? Well, be a Methodist. That's surefire answer. If in doubt, become a Methodist and give lots of money to the church. That's the answer. Okay? Got it? Yeah. Well, try it anyway. The more money you give, the more likely you are to be blessed by God. My dream, of course, is to have a corporate jet. It'll get you closer to heaven. What do I do? How do I know I'm right with God? How do I get beyond the guilt? Becky and I, our son Randy is out of town, so we had freedom last night. We went in our kayak close to sunset, put in over here, and went out in the kayak to watch sunset and watch all the birds on the rookery. And Becky takes the same picture she takes every time of the same birds. Don't tell her I said that, but it's like, how many pictures do you need of that same bird, you know? Just slightly out of focus. But how do you focus on a feather? I mean, you know, anyway, so it's beautiful sunset, lots of pictures, it's glorious. And then coming back, I realized there's a homeless camp in the bushes just before we bring the kayak back in. Okay, I'm at one with God, at one in tune with nature and the universe, all is well, I'm at peace in this great place, and then there's a homeless camp sitting there. You see the stuckness of life? I should do something about people who are hungry and homeless. And you say, well, the problem is that they're mentally ill. Okay, how do I deal with mental illness in our society? What am I doing to provide better care for the mentally ill in our society? How do I do something about people who are living in the bushes, 50 feet from where I'm enjoying the beauties of nature? Now, you see the stuckness of it? You know, how much good do I have to do so I can just enjoy the damn sunset? you know? I only use that word in church because it's a theological term. I mean, it is, you know. It is. I only say hell in church because it's a theological. You know, how do I get, Paul would say, I am so damned stuck. I can't enjoy the sunset because I see the homeless and the naked and the hungry over here, and I don't stop to clothe them and feed them and care for them and heal their mental illness. So I'm damned, according to the words of Jesus. All I want to do is watch the sunset. And I'm forever reminded of how inadequate my religion is, how inadequate my faith, how far from what it should be I am. Wretched man that I am, who'll rescue me from this? When Jesus had finished saying these things, he said to his disciples, the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. In the story of the crucifixion, Jesus is crucified between two thieves. Thieves are people who have not done the right thing. They've broken the laws. They have stolen clothes from people. They have stolen homes from people. They've left them hurt and bleeding. They haven't helped them, they've hurt them. Thieves deserve death. Under Jewish law, Roman law, almost any Roman law you can think of, they deserve punishment. And they're being punished on the side of Jesus. And then one of them looks over at Jesus and said, Lord, when you come into your kingdom, remember me. Now, what does Jesus do? Does Jesus say, not everybody who says Lord to me is going to heaven? Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And the Jesus who just taught, you know, it's not the people that say, Lord, Lord, but those who do my will that are with me. So a thief, a convicted criminal, says, Lord, Lord, I'll believe whatever you want. You know, I'll convert to anything you want. Lord, remember me. And what does Jesus do? Today, you'll be with me. Jesus, somehow, in that crucifixion story, transcends his own teaching. Yes, you must care for all people in a way that's impossible. You must do it, and I will judge you according to that. But as you are suffering your judgment, dying for being a worthless thief, saying, Lord, 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 hey, I believe, Lord, Lord. This thief is, he's doomed. I mean, he's done the wrong things. And now he's trying to get out of it by saying the kind of things that Jesus condemned. Oh, Lord, Lord. What does Jesus do for him? His hand is nailed to a cross, but his spirit reaches out to this thief and says, today, you'll be with me in paradise. That is why St. Paul can say, wretched man that I am, who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. I don't deserve this, but he loves me. Let's pray. Oh God, help us to do the right things. Help us to love our enemies, do good to those who persecute us. Help us to feed the hungry, house the homeless, heal the sick, and understand us when we fail to do it. It's impossible. But with you, anything's possible.